What was it? Jump frog? Frog jump? Whatever.
I've been in full!
The two people that are really concerned about substance abuse are Dana Plato and Todd Bridges.
I don't think Dudley's dad's orthodontia has anything to do with him being a better or worse victim for a pedophile.
Now the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you?
Hello and welcome. We are back. It is the Baller Lifestyle Podcast from theballerlifestyle.com. Very excited. Very special episode of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast, episode 149, last show of the year. And we're dedicating it to one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. And by greatest, I mean the only shit that was on TV when you were a kid. Of course, I'm talking about Different Strokes and a very special episode of Different Strokes, the Bicycle Man episode of Different Strokes. Joining me now, as always, our very own Ed Daly. Ed, how are you?
I'm a little creeped out after watching this episode again.
It was not what I expected. It was very, it made me feel very dirty. I feel like Gordon Jump should have won some type of award because he had to play, do some very, very creepy, upsetting things. And I feel like he had to drink his way.
He still haunts dreams with that performance.
Yes, he does. He really does. So creepy. Also joining us, a very special guest. You've heard him here before. You know him well. You've seen his beefs. You've heard his Crush Rock commercials. You've seen him in the movies. You heard him here recently on his very own Inside the Actor Studio. Of course, I'm talking about the great Mr. Automatic, Jason Stewart. Jason, how are you?
You know what?
Long pause.
It's a pleasure to be with you too. And I will say this, that I found out in a documentary once that these pedophiles use something called jump frog? Frog jump, whatever. Where they do something very disturbing, jumping over, bent over kids.
Leapfrog?
They now call that the Gordon jump.
Oh.
Leapfrog? Jump frog?
Whatever. Really, I was going for a joke there.
You really went a long distance.
I mean, that's the opening wow. minute. You might want to recalibrate things.
See, some actors aren't the best when they don't have somebody else's script to work off of. So I'm concerned about how the rest of this episode's going to go, but it's very nice to have you, Jason Stewart. Let's play a little jump frog tonight, okay?
Let's play some Gordon Jump.
Unbelievable. Okay, of course, we're talking about Different Strokes. This is a show. This is an iconic show. From depending on your age, but I'm guessing that most people listening to this show are of an age that this show resonates with them because they watched it often in their childhood. It ran from 1978 to 1985, 8 seasons on the air, mostly on NBC, but also it made the rare jump to another network. It ended up mostly on NBC, and then it ended up on ABC for the last year of its existence. Of course, the stars, so many stars on this show, but it was focused around child star Gary Coleman and his TV brother Todd Bridges. They played Arnold and Willis Jackson, two black kids from Harlem who are taken in by a rich white Park Avenue businessman.
There were a lot of shows, I guess, starting with the Brady Bunch, or maybe I don't even know if they're earlier than that. Yes. A lot of shows hinged on parents dying.
Yeah, it's kind of like every Disney movie. The mom dies, and that really gets things going.
Right, somebody has to die.
So this was one of those.
Over it.
Yeah, they didn't seem too bummed.
Brady Bunch never cared about their dead parent, and
never mentioned
these kids. Their parents died, and they're like, all right, at least we're rich now. Fuck them. Like, they never once looked
back. Yeah. Like, our mom was the maid, and now we get to live here. She used to clean these toilets, and now we get to use them. So, this is of course, they move in with businessman and widower Philip Drummond, played by the iconic Conrad Bain, fresh off a stint on Maude, and his daughter Kimberly, played by the iconic bangs of Dana Plato, R.I.P. So yeah, the mom worked for this rich family. They lived in a penthouse on Park Avenue. They got to move in. The series made stars out of child actors Gary Coleman, Todd Bridges, who we mentioned, and Dana Plato, and became known for the, quote, very special episodes, one of which we are here to discuss today, in which serious issues such as racism, illegal drug use, hitchhiking, kidnapping, and child sex abuse were dramatically explored. That's what we're talking about today, of course.
Wouldn't you guys agree, though, that, I mean, 6 years with NBC, that everyone back then kept throwing around this term that when they moved to ABC, that the show had jumped the Gordon?
All right, Jason.
This episode was, what is it, 83? So this was as
83, season 6.
So the thing with this show, it all,
or season 5.
It all hinged on the premise that Gary Coleman, the actor, he had some sort of growth problem. He had kidney problems, but there was growth involved. So he was he looked younger, so he could be like super precocious and look real small, like he was 4 years old and he's really 8 or whatever. And
But
what happened is they had to progress him, and so this was probably the last of him really, like last season of him kind of playing a kid. Then they tried to have him go to high school, and it was weird. And so then they added the worst sitcom character of all time, Danny Cooksey.
Yeah, that's right.
It went from adorable, cuddly, and cute to just like a weird, short high school kid,
angry seeming,
And the jokes were as unfunny as they were earlier on, but they seemed to be funny when they were cute and cuddly.
So in this episode, it's mentioned that he's going to be 12 because he's going to get the bike for his 12th birthday. So he's 11 in the episode, but in real life, he's born 1968, so that would make him actually 15. And that's a tough part of life. I mean, that's only 4 years difference, but a 15-year-old pretending to be 11 on TV. I mean, that couldn't have felt too good.
No, he seemed angry playing the role.
He really did. Well, being unnaturally small is one of the, I mean, there's a name for it. There's a complex that arises out of it, the Napoleon complex. And I feel like Gary may have been afflicted. A little more about the show. In pre-production, the original proposed title for the show was 45 Minutes from Harlem. And I maintain, and I feel like you've quarreled with me on this, Ed, that the different, and I only realized this recently, similarly to how I just maybe a couple years ago, and I had the revelation on this show, realized that Bosom Buddies was actually a double entendre. Like
you didn't get the tip.
I just thought they were close friends. I didn't realize that it was because they had bosoms. Similarly, it's diff rent. So it's diff apostrophe rent. And I maintain that's short for parents, that they have diff rents, different parents, because they go from having the dead mom to the new dad. Do you still quarrel with that, Ed?
I just thought it's trying to talk about they're from Harlem, and so they've got a little bit of a street pronunciation.
That's how I take it. I think they're trying to appeal to the urban viewers at that point.
Interesting.
It's a little bit cool.
Yeah, I don't think they were referring to rents. Like, I feel like in the 90s, people started doing that. It was a horrible idea.
People call their people like in college, like, hey, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? Rents. Going home to the rents. Yeah, that wasn't a thing on Different
that
Strokes,
like
you don't think?
That was a thing with Brendan Walsh. Like, that wasn't Different Strokes times.
Right. Okay. The series was originally devised as a joint vehicle for Maud co-star Conrad Bain.
Already read.
And child actor. Child actor Gary Coleman, who had caught producers' attentions after appearing in a number of commercials. Imagine, like, people were doing so much cocaine in the 1980s that they're like, you know what we got to do? You know what's going to just make us rich? We got to come up with a way to put Conrad Bain on TV for 30 minutes every week. Right. Like, and
it's not just like his looks. Like, he was a very weak actor.
He was not great.
He was not a good actor.
Not handsome. So that was kind of interesting.
By the way, speaking of dead parents, did we ever get around to explaining what happened to Conrad's wife?
No, I don't think. Well, it probably was discussed, but I certainly don't remember. Ed Daly, you might know.
I don't think so. I think it was like Kimberly just didn't ever seem to care about not having a mom.
Right.
And then
Kimberly had so much money, she didn't
care. Right. Replaced parents on that show. Nobody once thought about parents.
I'm reading the Wikipedia, and there is no mention of.
She must have died long before the Jackson mom died.
Yeah, they never really give a heads up as to what happened to old Conrad's, Mr. Drummond's wife. So we got the lay of the land from the show. Everyone remembers the show. I seem to remember. I felt like it was a Friday night show, I'm looking here.
It definitely was a weekend show, right?
It bounced around a lot. In the first season, it was on Friday nights, but I was just a wee lad then. I mean, I'm sure I was watching it. And then it moved to Wednesdays for the second two seasons. Thursdays, the prime Thursday time slot, 9 o'clock on Thursdays in its fourth season, and then it moved to Saturday for the most of the rest of its run until it moved to ABC in its last season when it was on Fridays again. So yeah, it feels like a weekend show, that's for sure.
And there was the thing about this sitcom too, that in case there are listeners who don't know the show, it came with one of the best catchphrases of the 80s, and it became such a part of the show that the writers were obligated and forced to work it into every single episode. That's right.
Even that's one right. that revolves around child molestation.
Yeah.
It's in there.
He had to deliver the line here, but once he said it, everyone went nuts. They went laugh track like to the 10th decibel, yeah. And it was the most uproarious, coolest thing ever.
Honestly, how starved for entertainment were we? That's because I think he even started doing commercials with his catchphrase in the commercials, and it's just such a dumb, unfunny catchphrase, even from a little kid. I don't think that I could have been amused by it after more than one or two observations. And yet they did it on every episode over 8 seasons. It was like, it was on t-shirts. It was a whole, it still is. It's probably a meme. Anybody that's into memes online, I'm sure that there's tons of Arnold Drummond, Arnold Jackson, what you talking about, Willis memes. And it's just a sad state of affairs. It's just really upsetting that this is what we were forced to endure as children when there was no internet. Would you guys agree?
I have to correct you though. Yep. Just like the diff rent strokes.
Yes.
I don't think it's what you talking about, Willis.
Oh,
it's
sorry.
What you talking about, Willis?
Well, that's right.
Apostrophe.
That's what I meant. My mistake. My mistake.
Hey, while we're on the subject of sitcoms, and this won't be breaking by the time we get it, I just got an RIP. Alan Thicke.
Whoa. Alan Thicke died?
69 years old.
69?
Wow. Yeah, just broke.
Alan Thicke wrote the iconic theme song, Two Different Strokes.
Exactly. I didn't know
that. Yeah, of course. He wrote a few different ones.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Breaking news. Not very old. Canadian sitcom star. Coxman died in hospital after falling unconscious while playing tennis.
I think maybe the biggest question here is, what is this going to do to Robin Thicke's schedule of crushing model ass?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to slow down at all, to be honest.
And I think one of Alan Thicke's last working jobs was working with my buddy Craigslist threesome guy who.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, Alan Thicke would seem like he lived the Hollywood lifestyle. He enjoyed the pleasures of fame. That would not surprise me.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah. R.I.P. Very sad. Very, very unfortunate to hear. Yeah, he wrote the theme song to Different Strokes. And again, the Different Strokes came to be known. I do remember the for its very special episodes. I certainly remember the Nancy Reagan one. She was such a bummer.
Yeah, that was a huge bummer of an episode.
Yes. And then this, it mentions here on the Wikipedia page, another episode involved a con artist posing as a relative of Arnold and Willis in an attempt to get access to the inheritance they were left by a former neighbor.
You know who the con artist was? It was Grady from Sanford and Son.
Oh, I love Grady.
Yeah, that was the guy pretending to be his uncle.
Yeah, Whitman Mayo. Absolutely. Unbelievable. Yeah. I remember that episode. I feel like that was very much a running a style of episode that they would do on 80s sitcoms. The con artist family member would show up. They weren't the only ones to pull that one. But of course, we're concerned with a two-part episode that guest starred. Yes.
By the way, didn't he also do a special episode? Wasn't there like a fitness episode, or am I thinking about a different?
But that might have been Gooch related.
Oh yeah, a bully related episode.
That's right. And was what Mr. T also had a catchphrase?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he did.
Do you guys remember?
Of course I do. What is Mr. T's catchphrase? I can't recall.
No, I threw it out at you guys to see if you knew.
Oh. He called people sucker.
No, he said, "I pity the fool."
I pity the fool.
Mr. T was a bouncer that won a bouncing competition, and that's how he got. Apparently, they were so starved for entertainment in the 80s that they would televise bouncing competitions, which I don't even know what. He just grabbed people by the arm and tell them to leave. And he won a bouncing competition, and that's how he became famous, which is shocking because I think in real life, Mr. T is like 5'3".
Yes.
Jason, have you met him? Have you? You hobnob. No,
I've never seen him personally, but if he's consistent with 90% of the actors in Hollywood, he's 5'3", and he was a symbol of strength.
Yes, he was. He was the world's biggest badass, and he's like between 5'3 and 5'5".
Well, just think about this show. Conrad Bain on the show looks like a tall drink of water. He was like 5'9 or 10.
Oh, no, that's shocking.
Yeah. He's not a tall drink of water. He's just an average-sized guy, but everyone else was Lilliputian on that show.
Well, that's, yeah, that.
I think that's why – I mean, I think Arnold made everyone look big. I remember hearing a lot of testimonials from prison when they were saying they thought Todd Bridges was a lot taller.
Oh, really? Prison testimonials of Todd Bridges. He does look tall on the show, though. Okay, so this – what are your – before we get into it, do you guys have specific memories of this episode? Like, what was it, what you expected when you got back into it, or were you totally shocked? I know we touched on this already, Ed.
Well, the one thing that I kind of remember as a kid was it was like a slow play, and you realize like late into the game that, oh, this guy's up to no good. But rewatching it and seeing the mannerisms and everything going on, you realize something's no good, like a minute into the show.
Yeah, that's actually a really good takeaway. I didn't recall that it was a two-parter until I rewatched it just before we went to air. And I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh, this is a two-parter. I go, so the whole first one is going to be the grooming period.
Right. Earning trust.
Yeah, where it's, hey, this is a safe space. Like, you come into this bike shop and you're going to get candy. We're all cool. And actually, no, it was if it was 2 hours, if each episode's 24 minutes, 48 minutes total, I would say he spent 3.5 quarters of that basketball game trying to get these guys to do unfortunate things as children. Yeah. Jason Stewart, your thoughts. What preconceived notions did you have coming into rewatching this episode, Different Strokes?
I had compartmentalized this way back in the far reaches of my mind. When they walked into the bike shop, when Drummond and Arnold and the family walk in, I vaguely remembered the episode. But when I went back to rewatch it, I would say this. It you need to go online and watch it, because the first like 30 seconds is the actor, the mod actor that you keep
saying, Conrad Bain,
giving us this warning of, you know, this is a special episode and we want you to talk about it amongst your family afterwards. And I must say, in the modern day right now, that got my attention. I said I need to pay attention.
And also, that kind of information coming from a creepy guy makes it especially interesting.
Well, that comb over has always been so disturbing. Like, somebody really needed to reach out early. Like, this is pre-Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis came along and he started going bald. And you know what? He's like, fuck it. I'm just shaving my head. And all of a sudden, dudes were like, oh, I could just shave my fucking head. This Conrad Bain, he was pre-Bruce Willis. So he was just holding on. He had that thing like feathered around, long on the sides.
It was like Maury's wigs.
It was, yes, it was really, really off-putting.
But think about that space and time. I don't know. I was 10, 11 years old, and you just want to sit down and you want to watch something and you want to hear what you talking about, Willis, and then you tune in and it's like, hi, I'm Conrad Bain.
Yeah.
I mean, that had to be a little bit discomforting.
It was a little, and I will say this, I do not recall, no, my parents did not heed Conrad Bain's advice. They did not pull me aside after an episode of Different Strokes and be like, hey, you just don't let any bike men jack you off or anything.
Yeah.
All right. They never brought it up at all.
I mean, when my gym teacher was getting real creepy with me, I tried to tell my mom. She's like, oh, come on. Yeah. All right, mom. Yes. Thanks for the assist. Hope you're dead, Mr. Measley. Hope you're dead.
It's so true. Okay, so the episode begins. It's a family bike ride, and Mr. D and Kimberly in very snazzy, not matched, but similar velour tracksuits.
Yeah, family that wears that goes biking together does cocaine together, apparently, with that. Everyone looks like they're in a drug scene.
Yes, they're rocking tracksuits, and they come into the bike shop to return their rented bikes, and they show up, and the red flag should have gone off right away, because there's bike shop owner Gordon Jump, and what's he doing?
Juggling.
Yeah, red flag.
And also, this place must be a front, a bike shop right by Central Park.
That's kind of weird, right?
Like a bike rental shop, but like a full proper. It's not like this guy was renting bikes in the park, like one of those deals. Like this, he had a proper storefront, and he's got a bike shop with like 7 bikes, and one of them he's already selling for a third off the price.
Yeah, it's a little something's odd. He's giving away free radios.
Yeah. Who's the clientele? Like, maybe he could sell early 80s sells to what? The Kramer versus Kramer kid. Brewster's Millions might have come through there. That's about it. Yeah. Who are his customers?
Very, very weak.
Well, the thing is, he enticed Arnold by saying that if you give out these flyers, I'll throw in a free radio. What was preventing Arnold from just going around the corner and putting those flyers in the dumpster? Was there some promise of having a certain number of kids respond to it?
There was no, there was nothing tied in. There was no bonus for return. There was no ROI is the phrase I'm looking for on the flyers. I will tell a personal anecdote. There used to be a donut shop in my neighborhood that would give me and my bros flyers. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, hey, go hand out all these flyers on like a Sunday. They go hand out all these flyers for our dumb donut shop. And when you come back, we'll give you a free dozen. And then we would go throw all the flyers in some trash can somewhere, or probably not even in the trash can, because this was back when littering was okay. We'd probably weaponize them somehow. And then we would go fuck around for an hour or so and then come back and we would get our free donuts. And it's shocking to me that Arnold was not able to pull this off. In fact, he was like trying to sell people bikes instead of just handing them flyers.
Yeah, he was the world's worst. He couldn't even give away flyers. He was terrible at it.
He was really terrible.
But let's go back to the first scene where they hit every joke like in that first interaction with Mr. Horton, they're like, they get made the Drummond is old joke, yep, where he's talking about, oh, muscles hurt that I didn't know were there. Arnold's too short. The family is so rich, so the chauffeur should peddle the bike build for two. They were like, every joke, they're like, all right, we're about to hit you with some heavy shit. Let's just get every joke out of the way.
Yeah, Willis even drops a winos. He's like, I saw all the scenery, even had to bunny hop over a few winos. Like, it's, when is the last time you heard a homeless person called a wino?
And you got the impression that they wanted to, in like 90 seconds, show how funny and lovable the eventual antagonist.
That's right.
Was. Like they wanted to like show just how funny and quick on his feet he was, and how, you know, ingratiating he was right away. And like most 80s sitcoms did, they just went over the top, and it was too much.
Just think about back to the juggling thing. If you ever went into a store to buy something and a guy comes out juggling and like giving you vaudeville music, I'd be like, all right, this is gonna be a lot of work. Let's just go. Let's find another place. I'm not putting up with a juggling guy.
No, totally. Also, he did a thing that was or that they were doing constant innuendos straight from the beginning. So the Mr. Carlson, I can't remember what his name is. It's not Mr.
Horton.
Carlson was
Horton.
His name. Mr. Horton. He was Mr. Carlson on WKRP. He's like, hey, Arnold, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And Arnold is like, you keep coming up with these presents, you can scratch me all over. I almost had to stop the episode right there. That was so disturbing.
Thanks, Mr. Horton.
I got a terrific idea, Arnold. What's the old saying? You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
You keep coming up with these presents, you can scratch me all over.
And the other thing is he keeps putting his arm around him. So much touching. If somebody just starts touching your kid, you'd be like, hey, buddy, lay the fuck off my kid. He immediately puts his arm around him. He's like, hey, what can I talk you into this one-third off bike?
Yeah, he was giving Mr. D the hard sell straight away. I would have been out of that place.
That's the thing. If I mean, I'd hate to get into the mind of these disturbing losers, but I'm thinking if I'm a pedophile and I hear that response to my back scratching joke, I'm thinking that joke could not have gone any better.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of your Tinder interactions, Jay Stu. When you drop one of your zingers, when you drop one of your Gordon Jump zingers on the first interaction and they come back with an LOL or the laugh, the crying laughing emoji, you're like, oh, I'm in. I'm going to slay this chick on Friday night. Yeah. Good analysis there. So Arnold goes and so that they leave the bike shop. They've made a deal that Arnold's going to get that sick red BMX for his birthday. He's pretty excited about it. But then he's off to hand out the flyers so he can get his radio. They never shot anything outside. They couldn't do any outdoor scenes back then. So everything was shot on a set, which was always very awkward to watch, I thought, because you're like, he's not really outside when he was at school handing out flyers.
Right. It had like weird shadows that wouldn't appear outside.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that this episode establishes is Arnold is a huge loser.
Oh, yeah.
From the flyer handout to the fact that Mr. Horton really, he's a distant second choice.
Oh, yes. No, he doesn't even ask him to take his shirt off.
No, he doesn't want to see him without a shirt on.
The cool thing about
Arnold, is that him as an actor, Gary Coleman, he didn't overact at all. He didn't get overly dejected or down after one person turned him down for the
same. No, he underplayed it.
Right.
Yeah, he's very soft played it. That was his skill.
He had understated elegance.
Totally. Agree with that. So then they bounce out. Then Arnold brings Dudley to the bike shop. Or no, I think Arnold just goes by himself. He rolls into the bike shop, and we get a little foreshadowing. As Arnold walks in, Gordon Jump, Mr. Horton is walking another kid out, one of his victims, and he's giving him some candy and he tells him, hey, don't tell your parents about this. It'll be our little secret.
I tell you, folks, I gave you all that candy. As a matter of fact, why don't you just make it our little secret that you was even here? Huh? Attaboy.
And this might be a good time to point out that maybe the canned laughed guy could have taken the week off. Because there were a lot of, like, hearty laughs when real weird shit was going on. And I remember the scene where the guy's escorting him out. Like, immediately there's, like, huge laughter.
Yeah, very, very awkward, very uncomfortable.
But, I mean, so think about this. Obviously, they choose to use the laugh track in this episode, and they choose to use the humor that the viewers were used to. But it's really strange. You're right. Like when they chose to do the laugh track for the pedophiles' jokes.
Yes.
It's like, yeah. are they saying? Are they trying to fool you into believing that he's a good guy?
That's a great point.
It's just disturbing to think back that they added laughter with the way he was seducing 8-year-olds.
I do. That is a good point.
We got this show about kid fucking. What we need is more laughs and belly laughs.
I do recall, though, being sort of shocked as a child when Mr. Horton took a turn. And maybe that was it. Maybe they had fooled me with the laugh track and the juggling. And I was simple at that time. I wasn't wise to the ways of the world. And maybe that's what they were trying to show. I do like that that throughout this episode, the innuendos continue and they just come left and right, including in this scene when Arnold tells Mr. Horton, I have a way with words, especially when I put my mouth to it.
Like you said, and I'm back for another load.
That is great, Arnold. You're sure some terrific passer out it.
I have a way with words when I put my mouth to it.
And then there was belly laughs for that.
That
one.
Yes. Very racy for 83.
I'll say. So it's at this point that Mr. Horton offers does the classic pedophile play of offering some sort of treat, some sort of enticement to a child. In this case, it's banana splits. And this is when we find that Mr. Horton lives in the back of the bike shop. There's an apartment behind the showroom. I don't know how he gets the bike. Usually the bikes come in through the back. There's got to be like some kind of workshop or warehouse area. Not in this case. He's converted his to a pedophile sex lair behind the bike shop. That was a little shocking, no?
Yeah. Most disturbing of all is his little home that he's carved out for himself. He's got these giant wooden hearts hanging on the wall next to the kid, next to the refrigerator.
Oh, that's
huge hearts. Oh, it was very weird.
That's not a yes.
Whoever did the set for this episode really embraced the pro children seduction angles. They put the video game in there,
yeah.
The board game,
the set dresser. Yeah. They're like, hey,
the fun.
How could I fuck a
that
kid?
You could jump on the cookies for days. Like, they really, really amped up the child friendly. I mean, again, 80s sitcoms were known for their subtlety. They didn't hit you over the head with anything.
Yeah, and speaking of subtlety, as Mr. Horton is making the banana splits, the innuendos just keep on coming. He tells Arnold at one point, I bet you're a whipped cream man. And Arnold's like, my tongue is faster than a hummingbird's wings. And then they have a real laugh about Arnold getting a cherry on top. And just the whole thing is just so, so disturbing in retrospect. And then at the end, they have, this is where he's been groomed, and you could tell that Mr. Horton's got his hooks in because they announce to each other that they like each other. And then
I really like you.
Yeah, I really like you. Throws his arm around his shoulder and he's like, "I like you too," and they're really buddies. And then he does the classic pedophile move where he's like, "Hey, by the way, you know, don't tell your old man that I gave you ice cream," and he drops the classic, "This will be our little secret" line. That is the tell, right?
Mm-hmm. And there was and I think this was supposed to be one of the talking points for when you got together with your family afterwards.
Yeah.
It's not just don't tell your parents, you know, it's our secret because you'll get in trouble. But if it's revealed that I let you back here and fed you ice cream, I will get in trouble. So
that's right.
He doubled down on the guilt. And I think that second part is what really gets kids, you know, they might be less concerned about themselves and more concerned about getting the adult in trouble.
Yeah, I'm nice to you. I'm a good guy. Don't, you know, you return the favor, buddy. You be good to me in return. Okay, so then they leave. The scene ends there. And Arnold goes back to during the scene, he sets up the fact that, hey, my buddy Dudley wants in on some of this handing out flyers gimmick. He wants a radio for his bike too, which of course really pleases Mr. Horton because that's his whole intention. You see what they do is they send one out to bring more back. That's the move.
Give one kid a taste.
Yeah, he's laid the bait is what he's done. And so then Arnold heads back home. And the lying begins. He's not hungry like he normally is. He's not, you know, he's had a banana split. The dad wants to know where he's been. He makes up a lie that he was at the pet shop. Like none of it was very believable. And this Mr. Drummond, this guy was not
very observant.
No, he was not exactly Columbo. Like he was not doing a proper investigation of his kid, right?
He says it's almost dinner, so that means Arnold shows up
hours.
3 hours late from 2-3 hours late from school.
Yep.
And he's got real shaky lie. And this is New York in 1983. This is like Bernard Goetz shooting people on the subway.
That's right. Yes.
Territory. Like he's just wandering, but yet he had his reservations earlier in the episode. They're like, "I don't know. I don't want you riding your bike in Central Park." But like, yet he shows up 3 hours late. Like they've got chauffeurs everywhere, and it's fine if it takes him 3 hours to walk home from school.
Yeah, very, very awkward. And then he says, "I was at Dudley's," and then he's like, "Oh, that's weird," because Dudley's called and said he was coming over, and it was just so obvious that he was lying. And this Mr. Drummond just gets totally played for a fool. Eventually,
how about this angle? I think the whole sit down with your family afterwards was supposed to like teach the kids to be aware and to pick up on signals. How about Drummond's character in this show teaching parents to be attentive and more concerned about their kids?
Absolutely. Concur.
And we have to shame Dudley a little bit because it was dinner time and he's just popping in. Like, just popping in. It's no big deal.
So rude.
So if one of my son's crummy friends decides to show up at dinner time, it's like, all right, off you go.
Yeah, I didn't pull out an extra pork chop for you, Dudley. You know, like give me some notice at least. Yeah. Hit the bricks. I didn't note that there was another awkward innuendo when Arnold is talking up how much fun he had at the bike shop. He tells Dudley, "I had bananas coming out of my ears."
Yeah, that was a tough one.
So eventually Arnold brings Dudley to the bike shop. And they show up in slickers, which I found to be a little off-putting. Knowing
what's with the headgear Arnold's wearing?
Yes, his face. He doesn't have like a hat or anything on or a hood. He's got like a. It looks like he's about to go scuba diving or something. He's got a slicker hat that only his face fits through. What is that? Goes around his chin.
He might be one of those on-the-spot weather reporters, like in the middle of a hurricane. Yes. Like that's the only time maybe that headgear works.
Yes. It seemed a little over the top for a springtime sprinkle in the Central Park area of Manhattan.
Didn't he go back or wasn't he enticed to go back to the store because the bicycle man – said that he could take the bike out without
Drummond's
permission, right?
Yes,
That's right. You can just go for rides.
That was their little secret. He's like, I got a way to get you the bike early. Just swing by, ride the bike around before your birthday, and just we won't tell your dad. That was part of the grooming process. Good point. Right.
They did complain about lack of space. Now he's got that huge waste of space entryway. Like, there was no space for a fucking kid's bicycle?
Well, he's not just going to put the fucking bike in the front of, in the foyer of his baller-ass penthouse.
But if that's the size of the foyer, he's got to be plenty of space elsewhere.
Well, Willis alerts that, hey, we can keep it down in the garage. He's got a garage for his limousine and his cars and whatnot. So, yeah, there's something down below the building where he can keep items. That's for sure. And, yeah, he could have just said, hey, how about I just pay for it now and you hang on to it here at the store, put one of those little sold signs on it that they used to do back in the day, and I'll swing by around birthday time and pick it up. Like, what if somebody else wanted to buy it? What, you know, this Mr. Horton, he's, you know, I don't think he's got really huge margins at the bike shop. Like, what if this Conrad Bain changes his mind? Somebody else comes looking for that bike. He's going to sell it to him, right? It's already 30% off. So he's looking to make a deal.
And he's only got like 6 bikes in the store.
Hardly any inventory.
I think the old saying is child molesters need to eat too.
I've heard that. I've heard that, Jason. Okay. So, he's brought Dudley over. The grooming begins.
When he has got that peephole, so when he sees them out there.
Yes.
He dresses the apartment. He sets it up.
That's right. And what's he put out? What is the one item he puts out hoping for them to find as bait, Ed?
Copies of Cutie magazine.
Yeah, a porno mag. He just leaves.
It's a porno mag, but I Googled to see if there really was a Cutie magazine. And shockingly enough, it's a Japanese teen fashion magazine, Cutie.
Yeah, but this one, it had like the tits covered up on the front. Like they were letting you know it was like a Jugs or a Swank.
Yeah, it was not high end. It was low end porn.
And he put it in with the comic books. Just he put it like this second or third down with the comics.
Club International. We did I say we already? How about Barely Legal? Barely Legal. Just trying to think of different porno mag names right now. He lays it on the table with the comic books, knowing the kids are going to come in and they're going to be like, hey, what's Batman up to? Oh, what's happening over here? And that's exactly what happened, right?
Yeah, but he also entices them with food.
Yeah, yes.
They're coming after school, right? So timing. Even if their school's pretty close to here, it's about 3:15, 3:20 in the afternoon. And he's got a pizza in the oven.
Yeah.
Now this either means that the guy is a psychopath that just cooks pizzas at mid afternoon without even knowing that the kids are going to be there, or he's got such a steady train of kids.
That's true. That's true. What's up with the frozen pizzas? Like, it's New York City. You could get a slice on every single corner. Just like run down to the corner and get a proper pie, Gordon.
Right.
Cheap bastard.
Pretty bad move.
But then, speaking of innuendos, they're in the bike shop, and I think Arnold's like, oh, you got something cooking in there? And to which Mr. Horton responds, you got a great smeller, feller.
Yeah, that was a douche chill moment.
Whew. Just really, really disturbing. So, yeah, they're hanging out, waiting for their slices of pie to come out. He's clearly grooming them. And Dudley happens upon the porno mag, and he is hooked. Like, the bait, the hook is in. He's taken the bait. The hook is in and set. And Gordon jumps
and
starts
to
reel.
What does he call the women? The ladies are
naked.
Naked.
Yes. I think that might have been my first introduction to the urban pronunciation of naked.
Same. Same.
I don't think that's probably the first time I'd ever heard that. So then they're like checking out the mags, and this is where it gets really creepy.
But also keep in mind, throughout this whole time, there's tons of canned laughter. We still haven't yes. gotten a gasp. Yes. We haven't gotten anything. Just laughs the whole time.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. Then he starts saying real creepy stuff. Like, Arnold's a little off-put. Like, Arnold's the one that's got a little more sense in his head. Yeah, he's taking little sips of wine, as is Dudley. But Dudley's all in on the wine. Dudley's all in on the porno mag. Dudley's all in on the wine. Like, Dudley is the perfect victim, really. It's Arnold that's there to kind of be like, oh, you know, I don't think I'm ready. I'm 11. I don't think I'm ready to look at titties in a magazine. Like, this is freaking me out. They're freaked out by the nakedness. And then Mr. Horton comes over and says, there's nothing wrong with being naked. Very disturbing.
The human body is a work of art, he said.
Yeah. You could have an awful lot of fun with your clothes off. I mean, I would have been run for the door at any age.
But you have to – I think we have to kind of go into the family situation with Dudley. Like, what makes him so vulnerable? What makes him such a perfect target for the Bicycle Man? I'm guessing that the old man with the outrageous overbite
His dad, who looks like former Boston College basketball coach Al Skinner.
You are jumping way ahead. You're like,
no, I'm just saying I'm trying to go background with Dudley. There's something with his family situation that makes him vulnerable. Whether it's the mother's not, maybe the mother died, just like all these other parents of sitcom folks. Or maybe the overbite guy is a little neglective at home.
That's his dad, Wesley.
Makes Dudley vulnerable.
I don't think Dudley's dad's orthodontia has anything to do with him being a better or worse victim for a pedophile.
No, they say that people with overbites are not good parents.
An underbite, you're a super parent, like Sigourney Weaver's the greatest parent on earth.
Does Sigourney Weaver have an underbite?
Yes,
she does. Oh my god, unbelievable.
We finally get to the first groan from the audience.
Yeah.
That's when he wants to show off his personal pictures.
Skinny dipping.
And by the way, it would be more disturbing. You know how old Mr. Horton was?
He looks about 65, but it was the 80s when everybody lived real hard. So I will say he was 52.
Yeah, he was only 50 or 51.
He shows the guys skinny dipping pictures. He busts out a little bit of wine. Things are really, really ramping up. I wonder if this is where Michael Jackson got the cue to substitute wine for Diet Pepsi and call it Jesus juice. Like maybe this is where he learned a bit of his trade. Then as if he hasn't creeped everybody out enough, he decides, let's play a little game. You guys like taking pictures. You guys want to play Tarzan.
Yeah. This is another slap in the face with Arnold. This is where he's like, hey, Dudley, why don't you take your shirt off? Yeah. Arnold, here's this giant safari hat.
Arnold, put more clothes on. You're not as hot as Dudley.
And when they're starting to talk about Dudley's physique with his shirt off, the canned laughter is back. Like, it was just the groan for the wine and the skinny dipping. Then it's like, oh, yeah, we're back to just a half-naked boy. let's start laughing again.
See if I got my trusty. Yeah, here's my trusty camera right here. Okay, here we go.
What kind of picture should we take?
Well, I got a great idea. Let's play Tarzan. I think you would make a terrific Tarzan.
Ain't no way I'm gonna play Jane.
All right, we'll make you the fearless leader of the safari. Here you go.
Hey, all right. Just call me Bowana.
Okay, Bowana. Why don't you stand over there in front of that man-eating plant there, huh?
All right.
And you pretend that Dudley here is saving you from it. You do that, can't you, Arnold? Mm-hmm. Okay, stay right there. No, pretend like it's got you in its clutches. Let's make this more authentic.
Tarsa never had a shirt on, Dudley. Dudley, take your shirt off.
Okay.
Now, let me help you with that, lad. Aha. Oh, that's nice. Aha. Oh, boy. He's got a great physique, huh?
I think he's built more like a pipe cleaner than Tarsa.
Things are still hilarious.
Did they not oversell the reaction of the kids to the taking the pictures? Like, I don't remember at 11, 12 years old being so overly amped up about, oh my God, this is so fun, posing for pictures.
Right. Yeah. That's what you dread the most.
That's a great point. There was no game. He's like, let's play a game. I'm going to take pictures of you with your shirt off. Like, I don't really see an end game to that game. That doesn't meet my definition of a game.
But yeah, we're winding down in part one. And then the super creepy guy starts putting on a super creepy voice when Mr. Horton starts muttering, guys, we are going to have a great time this afternoon.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. And he's sipping the wine out of a water glass. Like, you could tell he's like super, if he's not fully tumescent, he's like 80% of the way there. Like, he is in his element. He is not overwhelmed by the moment. He's done this before and he's very excited.
Yeah, he's super amped to be continued.
Tell you what, let's show those muscles, Dudley. That's good. Fine. Now we're going to take some pictures and we're going to have another little sip of wine and we're going to take some more pictures. And give me a strike a pose for me there. Yeah, let's see what you do. Oh, hey, that's great, guys. Guys, we're just going to have a great time together this afternoon. Huh? All right, let's see those poses some more.
Yeah, so that's how episode one ends. We move into episode two. Again, we get the disclaimer from Conrad Bain at the beginning that nobody paid attention to.
Conrad Bain. Tonight on Different Strokes, we're showing the concluding half of a special two-part show on a very sensitive and important subject. We urge families, children and parents alike, to watch this informative episode and then discuss the problem presented, which is of deep concern to all of us. Thank you.
And then we're immediately back in the same scene where we left in episode one. They're still playing Tarzan. Gordon Jump is just ramping up his behavior like no other. There's more wine. He decides to play another game, which is not a game. Let's jump on the bed.
No. First, he says, hey, how about I play a lion?
Oh, that's
right.
And
you ride around on my back. And Arnold, here's the fucking camera. Like, you're out of this game. It's me and Dudley.
Yeah. Yes, he doesn't have his sights set on Arnold, or maybe Arnold has just been too wary of his advances, and he knows that Dudley is a better victim.
I think this is when it kind of crosses the line, and there have been a couple of items already. You mentioned the innuendo, over the top language, but like when I saw Dudley get on top of the bicycle man,
Mr. Horton.
I was thinking, I don't even know if in 2016 a sitcom could do a special episode with a shirtless kid getting on the back of a strange man. I don't think they could pull that off in this day and age.
No,
certainly not. I totally agree. Yeah, that was very awkward. There was a lot. I mean, you just couldn't make this show today like you could then.
Before that, he wants them to call him something. They start acting like the Three Stooges. He's like, call me Curly.
Oh, that's right. And then they somehow have a very well-practiced, choreographed Three Stooges routine. Whoa, 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 whoa. Like, they do it perfectly, almost better than the Stooges, just impromptu, off the cuff. Did that strike anybody as weird?
It did.
Yeah,
And I remember thinking at the time, I said, so the writers of this show want us to believe that every 11 and 12 year old has a Three Stooges act ready to go. And of course, if you're a child molester, you know how to do that one thing.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It's very shocking. Okay. So we're done. They jump on the bed and then, I can't remember how it ends. Does Arnold bounce? No,
Mr. Drummond shows up in the store.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Mr. Drummond, there's the bell rings at the front. Meanwhile, this whole time, Mr. Horton's store is open for business. Somebody might come in to buy one of those three or four bikes that he has for sale out front. And meanwhile, he's back in his apartment doing a bunch of molesting.
Exactly. How could this business stay open on Central Park when he doesn't actually sell anything?
Yeah, at least, like, if you know you're going to get down to some serious molesting, just go up front and flip the clothes sign around and lock the door. Who's going to say anything?
Right.
And what are the odds that one of your victims' old man shows up, which is what happened? He looks out of that very creepy peephole of his, and he goes out, and it's Mr. D there randomly to pay for the bike that he should have just paid for the first time. Like, who wants to make an extra trip just to flash his credit card? Like, why didn't you just pay for it when you were there the first time in your velour sweatsuit?
And they had to crowbar in an American Express commercial joke with the "Don't leave home without it."
That's right.
That was great. That was great. That was a belly laugh right there.
And if you think about it, this will be the second of three trips. It was the initial trip to claim the bike. I'm not going to pay you for it, but claim it. Come back. I'll give you a check for it. And then I'll come back at a third time and get the bike.
Yeah, are we sure he's actually rich?
This transaction has so many layers to it. And I will say this. If what's his name? Again, 80s subtle writing and acting. If I'm a child molester, I have mastered the art of acting like everything's normal. I don't, in the first scene, come out and do jokes and juggling and I'm a laugh a minute. And then all of a sudden, because the parent of the kid that I'm trying to rape in the background is at the door, now all of a sudden he's like understated and he's nervous and distracted. And Drummond's like, "Is something wrong, Mr. Horton?"
Well, in his defense, that was weird. He was a full on dick to Mr. D to try to get him out of the shop. And it was, maybe blame it on the Reuniti, or it seems like he should have been in a little bit more control. Like he would have been through a similar situation in all his previous years of molesting. It seemed out of character.
And I think too, before it was even a thing, Drummond was acting as the essential cock block in that scene.
Yeah, it's true. He really broke it up because the two kids run. Apparently there's a back door at this apartment. They run out the back door. They head home. Arnold gets home and immediately he's just because he's chewing gum, the Willis and Kimberly immediately know the jig is up and they can tell he's been drinking wine. And Did that strike you guys as odd?
The sweet irony is that the two people that are really concerned about substance abuse are Dana Plato and Todd Bridges at that time.
Wow. Yes. That's a great point.
Hey, what are you doing?
Also, is this the point where Dana Plato has just the strangest pirate shirt on? She's got like a yes. Purple. It's like the pirate shirt from Seinfeld. It's got big puffy shoulders and it's buttoned all the way up to the neck with like a lace collar. And it just seemed like the oddest day wear for a high school girl.
It's troubling.
And usually when you like, obviously her school day was over. So you go home and you put some casual clothes on. That was her casual wear.
It was a strange outfit. Also, a lot of 80s commercial vineyard humor involved in this, where she's like, "You smell like Blue Nun" or something. Like they really were. There's like, "Hey, he'll sell no wine before it's time." Like, has Paul Masson been walking through? Like they had. I'm like, "Whoa, Ernest and Julio Gallo." Like they had like every single one nailed. Like I think just because the writers were like passing those bottles around.
Yeah, it was a tough week. They're like, "All right, what are we gonna do next?" And then they're just drinking and looking at the labels. Yeah, here we go, Reuniti.
Arnold gets busted, but these idiots, the older brother and sister are like, we're cool with it. Yeah, you're 11 years old and you come home smelling like booze and you say your best friend's dad gave it to you, but no big deal. We won't tell dad. Just don't do
Instead,
it again.
We'll try to cover for you.
Yes, odd behavior, right?
Okay, and then what does Mr. D say when he shows up, when he sees Arnold on the steps? Like, he walks in after.
He's like, "Give me a big old hug."
I haven't hugged my kid today. Like, oh, calm down with all the touching, buddy.
Yes. It's a really, really just a little too close for comfort. Yeah. And so then the next day, what happens after all that's happened? Arnold and Dudley right back to the bike shop.
Yeah. And they're using the nickname Curly again. They're ready to call him Curly.
He's earned a nickname. Like, he's really engendered trust. The children have been well groomed. But Arnold's starting to see the forest for the trees, right?
Now, if you're trying to entice someone with food, now, I'm not a big fan of the frozen pizzas, but, like, you get it. If you're trying to entice a couple of 11, 12-year-olds with pepperoni pizza, that's fine. Now, where on the list would Boston cream pie rank? Like, seems like an odd choice to entice them.
Well, I don't know. It's a sweet.
I mean, I'm not saying it's terrible, but, like, would that be in the top 70?
I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, pudding or something.
Chocolate chip cookies? Something.
More tangible to an 11-year-old. Boston cream pie seems a little too sophisticated.
Boston cream pie? What is that?
Yeah, I would say that, offering of the pie was a little weird. But then he offers them just like the most basic of activities that they think sounds like the most fun in the world. He's like, how about I throw on some cartoons and we eat some pie? And they're like, cartoons. Like, let's watch cartoons. And it turns out these are porno cartoons.
Yeah. And Arnold uses the term undershorts. He's not wearing his undershorts.
Hey, the mouse just lost his pants. But he's not wearing any undershorts.
Oh, wow. Undershorts.
I think we need to keep reminding people of this. There are laugh tracks. There's laughter throughout the entire thing.
The whole time.
Into the second episode.
The groans were only there for the skinny dipping.
Still laughter.
The skinny dipping is the only groan. Then it's back to laughter.
Yeah, it's a laugh a minute. The guffaws are going throughout. But this
Murphy
Dudley is hooked.
Dudley's way into Murphy the Mouse.
He's loved the wine. He's loved pretty much everything that Mr. Horton's offered up. He's way into the cartoon porn. But finally, Arnold has had enough. He bounces out of there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and now it's time to move in for the kill. What's the game that Mr. Horton proposes for Dudley?
Yeah, he wants to play King Neptune in the bathtub.
Neptune, King of the Sea.
Yes, they're like, finally, just the ultimate red flag. So Arnold heads back home, or no, Arnold's not home yet. We're back to the apartment. There's a knock at the door, and who happens to be at the door? Dudley's dad, with his big, scary jaw, and his just awkward appearance. I remember watching this episode and going, how did this guy get a job on TV?
Good afternoon, Phil. How are you?
Hi, Ted. Come on in. What a nice surprise.
Hi, Mr. Ramsey.
Hey, Mr. Ramsey. How are you doing? Look, forgive me for barging in on you like this, but I thought it was something we should discuss in person. It's about my son.
Well, come on and sit down.
Have you ever seen a more wooden actor? I know, Jason, you've worked with a lot of people. He's the most wooden, right? There's never been a more wooden actor, right?
He was pretty wooden. He was pretty laconic. But I will say this: he's distracting. He's a fascinating looking person.
Yeah, he is.
There's nothing normal about how he looks. You know, like commercial directors look for like the most bland, uninteresting looking people just to kind of fit in. This guy cannot be on a scene without you staring at all the incredible features that he's got going on.
He looks like he could be – he's like the less handsome brother of Ashford from Ashford and Simpson, the guy that looks like a lion.
Well, look – I'm telling you, look up Al Skinner, Boston College coach. Yes. I don't know what happened to him. He looks exactly like Al Skinner.
Exactly right.
Yes.
now that I'm thinking about it, Skinner and this actor which could be the same guy as far as we know, but he strikes a resemblance to the bounty hunter that held up Han Solo and Chewie in the first scene.
You're talking about Bosk.
Star Wars. Not Bosk. It's the other guy with the giant buck teeth. I don't even know his name.
Oh, look at I think I know who you're talking about.
I'm not a nerd. I don't know the Star Wars shit. One thing I did happen to look up this actor, the actor that played, because he is a striking character. I looked up the guy that played Dudley's dad, Wesley, and his name was Lee. I think it's Lee, just spelled L-E. Could be Lay.
Oh, no.
Lay Tari. How fucking old is this guy, Ed? How old would you guess that Lay Tari was at this time playing this character?
I'm going to say double nickel.
55?
Right? I mean, he doesn't look that old, but he looks like he's wearing some years.
Yeah. Double nickel. He's got a receding hairline. Ed Daly has him at 55. Jason Stewart, what's your guess? Lee Tari's age when he played Wesley's dad on Different Strokes?
I'm way under. I'm like 36.
36? Jason Stewart. Jason Stewart nails it on the head. He was 36 years old at the time.
Wow.
Died in 1987 at the age of 40. Taken before his time.
I wonder if it was lung cancer, because another very special episode was when Dudley and Arnold were smoking and they revealed that Dudley's dad had his lung removed. Like,
I recall that episode.
So that's, I wonder exactly, if they were doing, like, you know, true life inspired yes, rip from the headline stories.
Ripped from the headlines. Wesley, Dudley's dad. So he's got a sick leather jacket on. He's looking pretty slick. Then he does a thing, and this happens a lot on sitcoms, where there's not really any room on the couch, but he just plops down right there in between Willis and Mr. D, and it's very awkward. Like, Willis should have gotten up and made some room, right?
Yes, but at least in Willis's defense, of the two parts, Willis had the only amusing line in the entire thing right here. When they're talking about that they're boozing. He said, looks like the babies have gone straight from the nipple, gone from the nipple straight to the ripple.
Yes, that was the zinger of the show. Absolutely.
That was the zinger of the two-parter.
A bum wine reference, too, by the way. Excellent. That was at least the fourth wine reference they'd done on the show.
And then not even like, moving over and making room on this small couch thing. I'm also struck by how pretentious and uncomfortable the couch is. It's like,
yeah,
over-the-top rich guy couch in a living room. And I don't understand that one. Like, you have three kids. Like, it should be all about comfort. Why comfort. Do you have show-off furniture in your living room that looks so uncomfortable?
It's like a Louis XIV couch.
Yeah.
And are we to assume that the viewers are watching them from the TV, or do they not have a TV in that room?
That always drives me crazy. I never know what's going on there. Like on Happy Days when they're sitting in the booth, am I looking at it from the other side of the restaurant, or is that the wall? Is there an invisible wall there? We're looking through the wall, right?
I
that drives me crazy. I never know. Oh, okay. So then they have the talk. They realize this Wesley, Dudley's dad, and Mr. D have a talk, and they realize their kids have been lying to them about who's been given the wine. Everybody's getting wine from their dad, the other guy's dad, but they're not really. They realize that's not what's happening. And then Arnold walks in and wee, 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 catchphrase alert.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we are almost out of time. You better deliver it somehow.
Yeah. What was Dudley's father doing here?
Well, he came to discuss something that I found quite informative.
Oh, what's that?
You and Dudley hitting the bottle.
What you talking about, Dad?
What you talking about, Dad?
Yeah, so Mr. he drops a what you talking about, and then he spills the entire beans, including allowing for the group that Mr. Horton had shown him, quote, kinky cartoons.
You know. standard fare. Mice fucking.
Do kids know the word kinky? Do kids call things kinky? I don't think so.
I'm guessing he Mr. Horton also showed him a John Waters movie or something.
So Mr. D decides, hey, he's got to take some action. Shit is going down at the bike shop. He calls the cops. He and the cops show up to the bike shop to interrogate Mr. Horton.
The Detective Simpson that's there. It's like, all right, well, we're the 80s. We're going to play it real subtle. We're going to have the detective in a trench coat and hat like Inspector Gadget. He's going to show up.
It was such a shocking outfit. It's like somebody said, like, he could have been in uniform, like a cop uniform would have been better, but they wanted to show that he was like an investigator, right, a detective. So he had the full trench coat. Yeah. And like the fisherman style hat, the Inspector Gadget outfit to a T. And they come in and save the day, right?
Sort of. I mean, Dudley, they find him in the bathroom,
yeah,
flushing the toilet.
He's been given a
They're flushing the toilet, yeah, and people are laughing. Like, we don't know if he was just shitting blood, but everybody's like, yes, ah! and then he's talking about being all woozy from taking a pill, and the audience is still laughing.
Maybe he's in here,
hey, Mr. Drum.
It might be better if I looked in there first. Dudley, are you okay?
Oh, Mr. Drummond, am I glad to see you. Boy, I sure feel goofy.
Did Mr. Horton give you anything, Dudley?
A pill. He said it'd make me feel good.
He's been drugged. I'll tell you right now. No 11-year-old knows how to swallow a pill. You can't give a kid a pill. Was it a chewable?
That's right.
Like this,
right? Crushed it up into some more Boston cream pie.
Yes, exactly. Also, like, be a better molester, dude. Like, you're giving the kid a pill. Just put it in his. Give him a soda with the pill, roofie style, in the soda. Like, this is molesting 101. I thought.
Yeah, and the guy has had a pretty meticulous plan to this point. Everything's been laid, yeah, out, and then it seems like he fumbled it.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it. The loose ends that Mr. Horton just didn't consider, you have a troubled child leaving the scene because he doesn't like what's going on. Like, didn't, yeah, you think in the back of your head, this kid might go rat me out somewhere?
Isn't one
of the rules to not allow a stunned child to leave your premises?
But he was
well. That's why I think he went in for the kill, yeah, immediately.
Because he was compelled. He was so close, and he was too messing, and he was compelled to rape. And he's like, "I got to do this now, just in case."
And a few years ago, I stumbled upon Shavar Ross's Twitter account, and I asked him what happened to Dudley once Arnold left.
That's the actor that played.
Yes.
Oh wow.
And he just wrote, LOL, you were there too, or something like that.
So he kept.
I'll share that as a show companion. You can put his.
I was going to say,
absolutely.
He maintained the theme of laughing at inappropriate stuff by LOLing your reference to molestation.
Yeah, the laugh track was going off in Dudley's head.
LOL.
Okay, let's wrap this up. So Dudley's dad comes in, and this is like the lesson part of the show. Dudley's dad comes in, and he's like, you didn't do – he does everything you're supposed to tell a kid that's been – had something bad happen to him. He goes, I love you. You didn't do anything wrong. I'm not mad at you. You're still a good kid. Blah, blah, blah. Put your shirt on. And then everybody retires back to the Drummond's living room. The family retires back to the Drummond's living room, where they do sort of some exposition and explain pedophilia and whatnot, right?
Yeah, it's a very wooden scene. I guess because Dudley's dad has laid the foundation. It's the most wooden explanation scene.
Yeah, I would agree.
And you... I guess this was also where the parents were supposed to pay attention and talk about it afterwards, that don't try to go get the molester off your kid alone.
Yeah.
You need to call the cops first, because I think he said, because if we didn't catch him in the act, then it would have been tough to prosecute. So there's the lesson there. Call the cops. wait more time and give the molester a chance to rape your son even more.
Right. They said he would have destroyed the evidence, but I thought that was a little weird that he's like, hold on, let's wait for the cops or something before he went over there, knowing that Dudley could have been being murdered in the back of the bike shop. And then Conrad or Mr. D ends it with something sort of odd in that
reads the PSA.
He tells Arnold, I'm so proud of you, son. what the guy's been sneaking around behind your back, lying to you, taking candy and wine from strangers and looking at pornography at the back of the bike shop. And you're so proud of him in that moment. I found that a little queer.
Yeah. And if I'm going to praise Willis for the line of the episode, he also had the worst line of the episode when they're like, oh, Mr. Horton. And they're like, and Willis goes, I didn't know Mr. Horton is, you know, gay.
Gay.
And they're like, he's not gay, Willis. He's sick.
Yes.
And they just moved on. Like, what the fuck just happened there? That was a weird.
It was really. Because the cop was like an expert. He was basically a psychologist. He's like, actually, no. The pedophiles are into children. They're not gay because they're not attracted to adults. And it's like, oh, okay.
All right, cool.
Cop. Thanks, detective.
And there was a reason to explain that to somehow quell the thoughts that just because he was after you two doesn't mean he's into men. I'm not quite sure why that distinction was made. What exactly are they trying to teach the audience there?
That was a little odd. The whole last scene was odd. Okay, let's wrap it up. Any final thoughts, Ed Daly?
I have to think Maytag wasn't too pleased when – I mean, that showed up in reruns for the next decade and a half. And he – right after this episode, he became the Maytag man. So
– yeah. What about his stint on WKRP? Was this a concurrent – or he did WKRP before?
I think that ended – like that was like a – that show probably was in the late 70s. So by 83, that show probably was over.
WKRP ended in 1982, the season before. So apparently this Gordon jump didn't save his money because he had to jump right into doing something.
I need work. I need work with network television. All right. You got to be a kid fucker.
There had to be a few people to pass on this before Gordon jump took the job.
So Gordon jump went from WKRP to this special episode of Different Strokes. And Lonnie Anderson went into the next phase of her life, getting the shit knocked out of her by Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, and whatever happened to Gary Sandy? Anybody? Okay. Jason Stewart, your thoughts, final thoughts on the very special episode of Different Strokes.
I'm going to encourage listeners to watch this episode and see if they get the same feeling I did. The first 30 seconds are a little troubling. Like, you get kind of a sense that something's going to go down and it's not good. And that had my attention right away. And then the laugh track.
So much laughter.
Along the way, up until the end, dealing with a more than disturbing subject matter. It's just fascinating early 80s television, and you have to keep in mind that, just like Brian said at the beginning, there were exactly three networks, and a third of the country was watching this show.
That's crazy. It's crazy. Shocking, really. Unbelievable. Okay, guys, I want to thank you. Excellent job all the way around. This was something that we all have a memory of in our childhood. And I went back and looked at it, and it was definitely not what I remembered. It was much, much, much more disturbing.
I think it's an appropriate way for us to close the year 2016 with this episode.
As bad as this year has been, as fucked up as the world seems, as many people as we have lost. Is Gordon Jump still with us, by the way? We need to find out. Or did we lose him a few years ago? I think we did.
Yeah, I think we probably 10 years ago.
That up, While you look that up, I need to point out that I have a feeling that this was the best podcast done on the Bicycle Man from Different Strokes all year.
I think you're right. I think the 2016
of all the other podcasts, yes. I think we did it the best.
Best, very special episode.
Top three.
I would say, yes. Gordon Jump kicked off just a short while ago, 2003, September 1932 to 2003. Best known as the clueless radio station manager, Arthur Big Guy Carlson, the TV series.
I beg to differ.
WKRP.
We know what he's known as.
It's right up at the top, though. His character attempted to molest Arnold and his friend Dudley. It's the first paragraph of his his Wikipedia page. I bet he really regretted that. R.I.P. Gordon Jump. Okay, guys, excellent job. I really appreciate it. Listeners, thank you very much. It's been a fantastic year of the show. This is the last show of the year. Everyone enjoy their holidays with their family. Jump back in with us at the beginning of next year. You guys are awesome. We love the audience. We're stoked we could do this. Episode 149 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. For Ed Daly, for special guest Jason Stewart, for the conspicuously absent Fancy Sauce, I'm Brian Beckner. This has been the Baller Lifestyle Podcast from theballerlifestyle.com. We will see you next year.
Now the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some.